Will Senate Education Committee come to order, please? It is Wednesday, March 28, 2018. The time is 8:01 a.m. In attendance are myself, Steve, Senator Stevens, Senator Geisel, Senator Begich. The others will be here shortly. We have a quorum to conduct business. And here comes Senator Coghill. Today we're going to resume hearing on Senate Bill 216 relating to school consolidation. And my intent today is to hear from the bill sponsor, any stakeholders that wish to speak, take public testimony again, and move the bill on to its next committee as a referral. Any questions before we begin? Well, thank you. We have the bill sponsor with us, Senator Von Imhoff, if you join us, and Jonathan King. If you come to the table, please. State your name for the record, and if you'd present the bill, we know what it's about, but if you could sort of give us a review of what it entails.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jonathan King, staffer Senator Von Imhoff. I will be doing the sectional analysis today of SB 216. As a reminder, this is a bill which encourages the efficient use of facilities both in urban areas through making consolidation easier and in rural areas by encouraging school districts to maximize the use of their available capacity.
Thank you, Jonathan. And we have Senator Hughes with us as well, so we're a full committee. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senators, I'll be doing the sectional analysis now, starting with Section 1. Section 1 adds new language to AS 1417-410, subsection B, paragraph 1, which would provide for a consolidation transition that allows a school district to gradually move from their current state aid amount to a lower state aid amount after the consolidation of schools, and describes how and when that consolidation can be used. This particular subparagraph H sets forth a four-year transition period where in years 1 and 2, the district would receive the same funding as if the consolidated schools were still separate. That is, of course, dependent upon enrollment staying the same. And in years 3 and 4, there would be a step down to the new post-consolidation amount, which is the amount that is already established under AS 1417. And in the third year, we would end up with 66% of the difference between the post-consolidation and the pre-consolidation. And in year 4, it steps down to 33% of that difference between the post-consolidation and the pre-consolidation. There are a number of additional subsections after H. So we think about H as essentially being the math. And then subsections I through L place specific conditions on where that consolidation transition may or may not be used. So for subsection I, when the transitional state aid amount would result in lower funding than the transitional formula, that means that you could not use Section H in that case. You could not use Section H when a school district is already receiving state aid due to the hold harmless clause in AS 1417-410, subsection B, paragraph 1, subparagraph E. So that is the existing hold harmless for rapid reductions in school numbers. So when we have a school that loses 5% or more of its population in between fiscal years, there's a hold harmless in there to prevent a fiscal shock to the district. Subsection K would prevent the use of subsection H if a new facility was constructed in order to consolidate schools. The idea here, of course, is to encourage consolidation, which would save money to the state treasury. Very frequently, particularly in unorganized areas, the state is the primary funder of building new schools. The idea here, of course, is to save money and to use existing facilities. So you can only qualify for subparagraph H, the consolidation transition, if you are using existing buildings. You cannot construct a new facility and use H. Under subsection L, it says if the school was reopened and reconsolidated, it should be the past 7 years. And so this is to prevent school districts from going back and forth and reopening and reconsolidating schools to essentially game the system. We don't necessarily think the school districts would do this because it's very painful to change boundaries and to be reopening schools. Parents tend not to like that. But it's a good idea to probably have this in statute and make it very clear that that's not the intent. Subsection M requires that the district provide the necessary information and calculations to the Department of Education and Early Development for verification, including a student count by schools for the schools involved in the consolidation. This is to limit the administrative burden on the department and to ensure that we have a check and balance in the system. Subsection N defines a community as an organized municipality or an unincorporated area with a population of less than 2,000 people to clarify which schools can be consolidated. As we notified committee members yesterday, Deed and the school districts have asked us to remove this subparagraph because they have their own definition of community that they're already using, and that would be the definition that would be used. And so I believe that we let you know about that the other day. Section 2 affects AS 14-17-905 as a new subsection that allows a school that services grades K through 12 in a single building and has an average daily membership greater than 425 to be considered two separate schools for calculating state aid. As I mentioned on Monday, right now, if you are under 425 or under, you are counted as two schools for state aid. And when you hit 425, you get counted as one, and that immediate transition results in the loss of hundreds of thousands of dollars of state aid, even though nothing has changed within the school except the addition of more students. Section 3 makes the act applicable to schools which consolidate on or after the effective date, and Section 4 provides the effective date. That, Mr. Chairman, is your sectional analysis.
Thank you, Mr. King. So we've heard, and you've done a great job of explaining the fiscal issues and how it improves the financial situation for the districts. That's certainly an important issue for us, but more important for the, equally important for the Finance Committee, but we're the Education Committee. So again, my question that was not answered last time is, how does this improve the educational experience for our students? How are they better off attending a school of 1,500 instead of a school of 750? So I'd appreciate getting on the record the value it brings to the student experience.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this strapped time, and hopefully we'll hear from on this topic in public testimony, but in this cash-strapped time, you know, our districts are spread very thin. And I've had multiple school districts come and visit the office recently where I've taken the meeting, and you've heard from them how, you know, they lack support staff. They lack the ability to spread their services across these schools. So clearly, you know, we would hope that we always keep the education of children in mind. And so one possible thing is if we are consolidating schools, is that we now have concentrated resources that we can use to improve the experience of children within those schools. We don't have to have staff that are part-time shuttling back and forth between four or five schools. So, for example, a music teacher that is split between multiple elementary schools can now be stationed at an elementary school full-time, which makes it more efficient for the district. It gives them more time to be with the kids. They can be a resource within that building, even when they're not actively having class or holding session, that otherwise they're spending right now driving back and forth. So I think that in that way, consolidation allows us to keep those resources together in one spot where they're most needed and more effectively deployed, as opposed to having them transition between schools.
Thank you, Mr. King. I appreciate getting that on the record. Senator Geisel and then Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. King, on page 5, capital letter N, November, you said that the school district, or Deed, had their own definition for community. And I saw your communication yesterday related to this. Could you tell me what their definition of community is and why it's so radically different than you've described?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, for hitting the microphone there. Senator Geisel, so when we initially met with Deed, we asked, we put the original draft of the bill in front of them, And they asked us to use the word community. We went back to Ledge Legal and said, well, we need to include the word community in here, in part to ensure that we didn't create a situation where there was an incentive in very rural areas for districts to close schools in single school communities. As we know, schools are the lifeblood of these communities. When the schools close, the community goes away. And so that's, we didn't want to see consolidation simply for the purposes of saving money that could have that drastic of an impact. And so we included this definition of community. It turns out that the definition of community that we selected does not serve that purpose, and indeed because of the language in there talking about an organized municipality makes it difficult for the districts to actually do the consolidation, because we have districts that cover multiple organized municipalities, say the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, where we have the city of Soldotna, the city of Homer, the city of Kenai. So in this case, the department has suggested that the fix is to use their definition of community. Now, as for their definition of community, this at this point I would probably ask that we bring Deeds representatives to the table and have them explain it further.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. And we will make sure we get to that. Further questions? You okay?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clarification, you had, you mentioned the mistake in the sectional about 5 years, and then I do see that it says on page 5, line 27 years, that's in the section, that subsection L. Was there a reason for the change from, because you must have been thinking 5 years, was there a reason, or is that just an error, the 5 and 7 year dates?
We, through the chair, Senator Begich, we did originally have it at 5 years. And then it was suggested to us that it might be good to have a length of time that actually extended beyond the transition cycle. And it takes 5 years to go through the transition cycle from pre-consolidation to post-consolidation. And so the 7 years provides some stability so that you couldn't constantly be priming the pump as soon as that cycle ended. So that was the reason for the change to 7 years.
I appreciate that explanation. And just a follow-up comment on the prior question about impact on education. In rural areas, I understand, too, that because so much cost is consumed by energy, it actually ends up restricting. I mean, we've for years had, what, before we abolished them, they had the 70-30 splits, which basically, you know, you'd have districts appealing to not have to put 70% to instruction because it's so much energy cost. This would actually, and so that money was being taken away for energy purposes from teachers, and this would actually be an offset to that and allow you to keep more money in teaching as opposed to consuming it in two different plants paying for energy. So that would be another way it would benefit education, wouldn't it?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I think I see where you're going. You know, with Section 2, by reducing the incentive to build a new school once you get above 425, you know, you're doing exactly what you're saying. If we can keep people in those schools and we can keep districts using those schools that have greater capacity than 425, we're already paying for the heating of that school. It doesn't cost any more to heat a school that, you know, has a capacity of 520 that's operating at 500 than it does when that school's operating at 425 students. And so the more we can use that physical plant efficiently and take advantage of the economies of scale, the more we're going to have money left over for teaching resources. So that goes exactly to your point.
Thank you. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while we're mentioning other things having to do with the quality of education, I thought of another one I thought I might get on the record, see if you agree with it. More apt to happen in an urban area with consolidation of high schools, and that might be one high school might have a German teacher, one might have a Russian teacher. You combine them, now the students can more easily get their choice of the language they might want to take, and that could happen in multiple subjects. So the course offerings for students might expand through consolidation.
Thank you, Madam Mr. Chairman. Senator Hughes, that's perfectly succinctly put. I couldn't add any more to that.
Thank you, Senator. Some of the issues I just like to hear about is I understand that you cannot reopen a school until 5 years have passed. Is that right? You can't reopen a school that's been closed. So I guess my question is, you know, looking at our largest community, Anchorage, and the impact that, say, building a gas line is going to have on that, the number of people coming in, is that going to create a problem if all of a sudden you have an enormous increase in population and need to reopen a school?
Mr. Chairman, what the bill actually says is that you may not reopen and reconsolidate a school. So there's the and in there. You may reopen that school. You may not reconsolidate it then again and take advantage of Section H for the purposes of increasing funding. If you still own, if the district retains that facility, keeps it in warm status, and we end up with a gas pipeline, there is nothing preventing the district from reopening the school.
Thank you for clarifying that. Further questions? All right, thank you very much, Mr. King. Could we ask someone from the department to come forward to give us a clear definition of community? Thank you for being here. And for the record.
Good morning. For the record, Heidi Teschner, Director of Finance and Support Services with the Department of Education.
Yes, Heidi, thank you for being here.
And through the chair, Senator Giesel, in response to your question about the definition of community, you can find that in regulation, and it's 4 AAC 09.9902A2. And if it works for the committee, I'll just read what that definition says. So a community means an incorporated city, an unqualified municipality, or a place that is not incorporated as a city or a unified municipality and that has a school enrollment of at least 10 full-time equivalent students. So this definition is the one we use for the full foundation formula. So it doesn't make sense to have a separate definition for community for this just one subsection of H. And furthermore, the definition that was chosen for the bill speaks to a population of less than 2,000 people, and so that really kind of negates Anchorage, for example, being able to consolidate because they have a population of more than 2,000.
Thank you. Senator Giesel, okay with that?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions of the department? Would you get your name on the record just so we know you were here?
For the record, my name is Mindy Loba. I am school finance specialist for the Department of Education and Early Development and support for.
Thank you. Thank you both for being here. Thanks so much. So let's move on then. We have some invited testimony. Dr. Rob. I'm sorry, before you come up, another question, Senator Hughes?
I do have a question for the sponsor.
Sure.
And I could wait till after public testimony. But
we do it right now. Let's get Senator Von Imhoff in the hot seat here.
I'm trying to, maybe I'm off on this, so Senator Von Imhoff, you can maybe correct me. This whole reopen and reconsolidate. A school, two schools consolidate, and over the ramp down period, by year five, they are receiving less money than if they were operating as two schools. Do we have a safeguard so that the district would be, you know, we were bringing in more money before. Let's go back and let's reopen that other school and let's divvy the kids up because then we will receive more funding. Now, we're not going to reconsolidate, so it's not going to fall under this. But is there any safeguard? And I'm not saying districts would do this, but they could be creative if they were trying to get more funding in. Maybe, well, I heard yesterday one school district is paying 18% for health care right now out of their budget. You know, so is there anything that's going to prevent us, a district, from just say, let's go back and reopen that so we can bring in more funding?
Very, very clever question, Senator. Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
Well, thank you. So through the chair, this is Senator Von Imhoff. Senator Hughes, I will do my best to answer that, but I may ask for a lifeline behind me. I believe the bill, as it states, I think you can't interpret it that in 7 years you may have the option to do that, but before then, no. However, I cannot speak with conviction that a school can do that, but I think that's what we tried to avoid in the bill by saying within the 7-year clause you can't just reopen the school to receive the higher average daily membership. So when Senator Stevens had asked earlier, well, what happens if we have a population influx, that could be a game changer, perhaps, and maybe we would have a district ask for a special extenuating circumstances, and we might look at it then. But the purpose of the bill is to not allow that very behavior.
Follow up? Would it make sense, and would you consider to safeguard against that just the reopening cannot occur unless the student enrollment has increased, for instance, because then it would serve the purpose you're talking about rather than what I suggested, where they could just separate the schools again to bring in more funding?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I think that while I believe I understand the intent of the bill and I believe the language has safeguarded against it already, I can't speak with absolute certainty, so I am going to ask for someone if you feel like you can answer that. If not, then I will get back to you, Senator Hughes, with a more definitive answer.
We have a staff member behind you. We have a
okay,
response.
Brittany.
Thank you. For the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Brittany Hartman, staff to Senator McKinnon. So, Senator Hughes, through the chair, what we have done in this bill to safeguard against your concern is, one, what Mr. King mentioned earlier, that if you do consolidate two schools under one, if you would receive less funding under that new school, then you would receive the previous state aid. So that's one incentive not to go back to two. So the state's going to provide that for the first couple years you will get more money or the same amount. And then the second one is, as Senator Von Imhoff has stated, that we do not want to encourage schools to open just to close again and open again and close again. So we have safeguarded against that for 7 years. I do see your concern is very valid. However, I do believe the intent of the bill and the language in the bill does prevent that from happening. If you would like, we can consider going more than 7 years, or we can consider looking at that, but I do believe it is safeguarded for multiple times in the bill.
Thank you. Well, Senator Hughes.
Follow up. Where it was explained before, it's the and reopen and reconsolidate, so it protects against that, but I don't see how it's protecting against just the reopening. So that's my concern. And whether it be in year 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9, do we want schools to reopen if student enrollment has not gone up? I don't think we would after they've consolidated. So it's just something I know this will be going on to another committee that Senate Finance perhaps could consider, that we have some kind of safeguard related to the student enrollment.
Senator Von Helm.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that is a very good question. And, yes, in the next committee of referral, we will take a look at those provisions closer and be sure to bring it up on the record with an appropriate response that addresses your concern. Thank you.
Good point. Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, on that point.
Yes, Senator Begich was before. I'm sorry.
And on the same point.
Yes.
So I think the way I understood the bill and the way I understood you were presenting it, it was you wouldn't even enter into the thought of consolidation unless it was in the long run going to benefit your school district to start with. And I think that's the incentive that keeps you from doing it. You wouldn't enter into the very nature of the way you've written the bill would say that if I were a superintendent, I wouldn't even consider entering into a consolidation if at the end of that road I wasn't going to be saving money. So there would be no incentive to go back to opening without some dramatic change in the community, because that's why you entered into the consolidation in the first place, was to save resources. Do I get that right?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, that is correct. And keep in mind that in year 4, they're only getting 33% of the average daily membership calculation. And years 5, 6, and 7, for 3 full years, they are receiving the new larger school population but lower ADM calculation. So there is a 3-year you can't open the school provision. So when schools go into this, agreement or situation initially, they do have to plan 7 years out and think about that. Now, I suppose if the population does change, that's a different set of circumstances. But if the population does not change, I believe the bill does not allow them to do that.
If I could follow up.
Yes, Senator Baggage.
And what I'm seeing here in the bill is that I have an incentive as a superintendent. I've looked at this. I say to myself, I have a capital plant that's costing me this much money, and I want to reduce my capital plant costs. And this is a tool to do it that doesn't disincentivize me to do it. This actually incentivizes me to lower it. So I'm willing to take the lower ADM down the road because the overall savings to my district is considerable in terms of capital plant or energy costs or positions that are administrative in nature, those kinds of things. That's why it seems to me that this bill makes a lot of sense and that you already have built in those protocols that would prohibit somebody from being a bad actor. Would that be accurate?
You want to go ahead and answer that?
Senator Baggage, through the chair. Again, this is Brittany Hartman, staff, Senator McKinnon. You are correct in everything you just said. What this bill does is it removes a disincentive for school districts to consolidate right now because they would be losing so much money. So under this bill, it provides them a glide path. Instead of going from two schools to one and instantly losing hundreds of thousands of dollars, we are giving them a slow ease into that so that they can figure out how they're going to make it effective for the out years. That's what this bill seeks to do.
Senator stole my thought.
It was reading your notes. That's what's going on there.
Thank you, Senator. Any further questions, comments? Thank you very much. Department, have any reflection on any of this? Are you fine with it? Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, sir, very much for speaking. We'll now go to Dr. Rob Picot, who was invited testimony. Dr. Picot, hope I pronounced that right, Lower Yukon School District. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Rob Picot.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Through the chair, it's a real pleasure to be here, and I thank you for having me to for the testimony. I'd like to start by thanking Senator Von Imhoff for sponsoring the bill, and Jonathan King for all the hard work that he's put into this, and also for the department for helping me understand the complexities of the current statute language and how it would have a negative impact on my district if the change is not made. We're in support of this Senate Bill 216 for a number of reasons. You know, Hooper Bay is a growing community, 1,275 residents in that community, currently 449 students in the school. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the area, it's almost like three suburbs together when you count Scammon Bay, Hooper Bay, and Chivac. And there's a lot of movement in the relational capacity between those three communities. Kids go back and forth. Student might transfer, go live with a grandma in Hooper Bay. So the enrollment in Hooper Bay tends to be quite high. And it's a very large rural school district, a school in rural Alaska. You know, every school in Alaska is funded according to ADM, as we all know. Hooper Bay would be the only school that gets penalized under the current statute for growth. So that doesn't seem to be quite right for the community of Hooper Bay nor the entire community of the Lower Yukon School District. As far as I understand, the reduction in revenue would be approximately $1 million in the current statute language, and that would have very negative impact on our school district. That's quite a chunk of money to try to absorb in a budget that's getting tighter and tighter over the last 5 years with the rising cost of doing business. And, you know, this bill would hold us harmless for the unintended consequences of the legislation that was written in 2001. And, you know, when you go back and you do some research, as we have, you realize that back in 2001, they recognized the potential impact of that language on Hooper Bay. And Hooper Bay was mentioned specifically in that bill. So this is a long time coming. You guys are being asked to solve a problem that's been sitting there waiting for you since 2001. So that concludes my testimony. I'm available for any questions, and I'd just like to thank you for giving me this opportunity to come and share why I support, on behalf of the Regional School Board and all the parents and children of the Lower Yukon School District, in support of this bill.
Thank you, Dr. McHugh. Appreciate you being with us. Any questions? Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go to public testimony. We have two folks online, Dina Bishop, Anchorage School District, the superintendent, and Jim Anderson, the CFO of the school district. So, Superintendent Bishop, are you with us?
Thank you.
Please, go ahead.
Stevens, and thank you again to the Senate Education Committee. I wanted to be sure to be present again today to share our gratitude that this bill is forthcoming before you. And just to really understand, a lot of the questions in the interim since Monday have really been about how is this, can the system be gamed, if you will, for lack of a better word, to gain money in the district? And certainly, I hope that everyone understands that there isn't any more money to gain than to sit where we are today. And frankly, how we are today in the utilization of our buildings is actually maximizing the impact to the state in revenue as well as local. We are actually in support of a bill that over time would reduce the state share as well as local share to our school district to build efficiencies while keeping quality of education at a high standard. So the simple ask is to allow the transition from the present revenue structure, if you will, to a new revenue structure. The operations, if we were to continue to leave the buildings open, we are maximizing the operational money through the BSA and the average daily membership, or the base student allocation and the average daily membership. We're actually, our board and community administration is working to take a look at our facilities, understand the capital costs that might go into them, and then really balancing the differences in our loss of students over time and what that looks like. If we were to continue to leave the buildings open, we literally are getting the most money that we could possibly get. By moving the way of this Senate bill, we're operating smartly. We're doing what our community and really the state of Alaska has asked us to do, to look for efficiencies and operate smartly. This just will allow us that transition time. So I'm not looking at this as you know, shutting down, opening up, and any kind of a revolving door. It's quite a bit of work if we were actually to be able to utilize consolidation. It's not an easy task. So I just wanted to share that really leaving it alone is maximizing our opportunities, if you will, financially. But we know that that is not the best thing for the future of Alaska in planning. And I just wanted to share openly and honestly that this is a good thing, not only for the state, but I believe it will be a good thing for our students in schools as well as our local taxpayers. We want to do the most that we can for them. Thank you. And I do have Jim Anderson sitting with me, and he was here, but we, Senator, we initially separated because the House was going to hear this bill as well, but they ended their testimony because the experts were in the Senate, and so he's here to answer any financial questions, but didn't have an additional statement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bishop. Any questions of the superintendent or Mr. Anderson, who is there and available? Again, thank you very much, Superintendent. I always appreciate your making time for issues that face education and for the job that you're doing. So if there's no further questions or comments, we will close. And anybody care to speak in the audience? Then we will close this public hearing. Any additional questions or comments from the committee? The will of the committee, then.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate Bill 216, version R, from the committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Thank you. Any objection? If not, it moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease. On Friday, so everyone have a wonderful Easter, and nothing further to come before us, and we are adjourned.